Hey, are any of you guys going through menopause or perimenopause? Ugh, you know how you can't find any comfort in your body? Or even if you're done, if you're on the other side like I am, but you still kind of feel like a wet sock on a busy highway? You've got to try Hormone Harmony. So Hormone Harmony contains science-backed herbal extracts called adaptogens. So here's the beauty about adaptogens. They help the body, wait for it, adapt to any stressors, like chaotic hormone changes that happen naturally throughout a woman's life. So it's not just for menopause. Any woman with symptoms of any hormonal imbalance can take it, but it's perfect for those horrible menopausal and perimenopausal symptoms that put a woman's life on hold. Hot flashes and night sweats, racing thoughts and low moods, poor sleep and feeling tired all the time, occasional bloating and gas. Yeah, Hormone Harmony can help with all of those things. And the biggest benefit, feeling like myself again. That's what women mention over and over and over again in their reviews. And there are over 17,000 reviews for Hormone Harmony. So for a limited time, you can get 15% off on your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code DSG at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code DSG for 15% off today.
Welcome to the Divorce Survival Guide podcast, where we have open and honest conversations about co-parenting, separation, divorce, and the hardest question of all, should you stay or should you go? I'm Kate Anthony, your Divorce Survival Guide, and I'm here to help you navigate some of the roughest waters you've ever swum in and answer some of your toughest questions. I've been to hell and back. And now it's my mission in life to help you get to the other side of this process with your sanity and your heart intact.
Hey everyone, welcome back. How's everyone doing? Guess what? It's my birthday! Yay! It really doesn't mean anything. I mean, it does. It means that 51 years ago today, I was born. So I'm 51 now. Now I'm in my 50s. I'm not just 50. Ugh. Fun times. You know what you can do for my birthday is as I've said in the last couple of episodes, I think, I want to hear your story and answer your questions. So for my birthday, you can call in and leave a voice message to me. These will be anonymous, by the way, you guys. Nobody is going to be identified. We do ask you to state your first name and where you live, but you can be totally vague about that. We ask for your email address, but we'll edit that out. We just needed it in case we need to like ask you a question about or clarifying question or something. So, because I'm going to do an episode where I answer or multiple episodes, depending on how many people actually feel comfortable calling in and leaving questions. So here are the instructions. So the questions need to be about divorce or deciding to stay or go. I want you to be in a quiet place when you leave your message, right? Be aware of the wind, hair or clothes rubbing on your microphone or background. Honestly, the best place to do this in your closet. That is where I do my podcast, y'all. I do my podcast in a closet. That's it. That's my big podcast studio. Try and keep your messages under 5 minutes. I suggest that you just jot down a few bullet points before you begin recording to help you stay focused. Speak slowly and clearly. And also, I think that it's important that the question be something that would be useful for everyone, right? It's not like, don't send me something like super specific to your situation because that's probably not going to be like relevant on the air. To do this, go to kateanthony.com/questions. KateAnthony.com/questions. This will be linked in the show notes. And there's a button that you push that says start recording. That's it. That's all you have to do. I think that's all I need to tell you about today. I'm going out for dinner with my mom tonight. And then on Sunday, my girlfriend is taking a whole bunch of us out for dinner for a nicer celebration, which sure beats my 50th, which was on Zoom. Good Lord. I'm still waiting. I'm still having my 50th blowout party. It may be when I'm 55 at this point, the way the pandemic is going, but I will have it. I swear I will have it. Anyway, I'm really excited about today's episode. Today I have with me Day Schildkret. And Day is like, oh my gosh, his work is so beautiful. He is internationally known for mourning altars. And if you go to his Instagram, which I think is just mourning altars, you will see like, holy moly, beautiful, beautiful work. They're impermanent earth art. He describes it a little bit in the episode, so you'll see. Both Day and Morning Altars have been featured in BuzzFeed, Vice, Vox, Spirituality and Health magazine, and on NBC and CBS's affiliate stations. And he is the author of Morning Altars, a seven-step practice to nourish your spirit through nature, art, and ritual. And his new book, Hello Goodbye, 75 Rituals for Times of Loss, Celebration, and Change, was published 2 days ago. January 25th was its debut. So you can buy it now. And I'll tell you what, I pre-ordered a copy because this book is going to be like, you're going to be able to use it all the time for any kind of loss, celebration, or change. We are always in some kind of loss, celebration, or change in our lives. And Day describes this book as a recipe book. So you can just go in and choose a ritual to create. Anyway, I'm going to shut up and let Day talk to us about his book and the importance of ritual in our lives. So without further ado, here's my conversation with Day Schildkret. Day, thank you so much for coming on and talking to us about your new book and rituals.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I'm really excited for this conversation. So, well, let's first talk about your book.
Okay.
This is your Hello Goodbye. It's rituals for times of loss, celebration, and change. And I just don't think that there could be anything more appropriate for my audience right now.
It is, to be honest, it's completely shocking that this book wasn't written before. Huh. It really is. I did a lot of research trying to find this book, and because I didn't necessarily want to write it. I wanted it to exist. It didn't exist. So I said, I have to write this
book. Right. That's how all books are written. We're like, God damn it, not me.
especially now.
Yeah.
You know, people are in such pain right now.
Yeah.
And they need more resources. Mm-hmm. And so this book is really, in reality, it's a resource book. Mm. So it's really a book, just like I keep on calling this book a ritual recipe book. You know, it's like a cookbook.
Oh, yeah.
Keep it on the shelf. And when something is changing in your life, for instance, like you or your friend is going through a divorce, mm-hmm. take this book off the shelf, flip to the divorce chapter.
So there's,
you know, I wrote quite a bit. I interviewed over 200 people for this book.
Mm.
And then there's in the divorce chapter, there's two rituals, one for the ex-couple, if you can do that.
Yeah.
And
oh, so one, good.
And one for the solo. For mm-hmm. the individual.
Yeah.
And, you know, I see this book really as should be, you know, dog-eared, and it should be bent, and it should have many handprints on it. And you really want this book to get around, because when there is change, when mm-hmm. there's transition in your life, you need to be resourced, reoriented, supported, witnessed, so that you can mark that moment and change with the moment.
Yeah.
And that's what these moments are asking from us. We have to change with change.
So say more about that. Like, what does that look like? What does that feel like? Why is that important?
Yeah. Yeah, I'd say first and foremost, the big question, and specifically for your audience talking mm-hmm. about divorce, mm-hmm. you know, is really the question is, what does it mean to participate in ending something?
Yeah.
What does that mean to fully put it down? And what does it take even more so to do it skillfully?
Mm-hmm.
What does it mean to put something down skillfully? And so, you know, really a conversation on divorce is a conversation on is on endings.
Yeah.
And because the book is called Hello, Goodbye, it's also a conversation on beginnings.
Absolutely. They absolutely.
Live at the same door.
And you're not just saying goodbye to a person, to the other person. You're saying goodbye to
identity.
An identity, a way of being, in many cases, a career, right? If you've been a stay-at-home mom or, you know, all of those things, right?
Community, but there's a lot of change.
There's a lot of change. And then also you're really saying goodbye to the way that you have been, what you have tolerated, what you have said yes to, what you've said no to, all of those things.
Exactly.
Right. And there is a part of yourself that you are releasing.
And so to be completely honest, this doorway that I'm talking about, that I'm centering in this book, I mean, whether it's a divorce or the loss of your pet or, you know, weaning a baby or whatever it is, these moments of endings and beginnings, they need more from us.
Mm.
They need more than just going through it.
Yeah.
And approaching that doorway, it's fucking scary because it's really approaching uncertainty.
Yes.
Because the person that you were pre, like in before you walk through the doorway, or I call it in the book thresholds.
Okay.
Threshold, while you're in your marriage or in your family or in the relationship or whatever it is, you know what it is.
That's right.
You know who you are.
That's
you know what the relation with all of the challenge and the grief and the grievances in the relationship, you know at least what you're operating within.
Right. That's right.
But as you approach that doorway, the scariest part is that you don't know who you will be on the other side of it.
That's right.
You don't know what relationships you'll be in on the other side of it. You don't know what will survive on the other side of it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
A lot of us don't cross.
That's right.
It's fucking terrifying.
It's fucking terrifying. That's right. That's right. That's right. Mm. Yes. And that's, you know, that's my job. Like, this is what I do, is that I usher women in particular, some men, over the threshold.
Yeah.
Right. I hold their hand and I walk them over the threshold and make the decisions and craft the conversations and, you know, and deal with the overwhelm and the upset and the unknowing and all of that.
Mm.
But I love how you're sort of the ritual aspect, right? So let's talk about that, right? Okay. Like what is a ritual, period? And like, what is ritual?
We'll step away from the conversation on divorce for just a second and just talk about ritual. I mean, As I said, I interviewed 200 people for the book and in every interview, I asked that question. I said, how do you define ritual?
Uh-huh.
Because it's such a broadly based, I mean, it's so many, I had over 200 definitions.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
And none of them are the same. And each one of them was poetic and potent and beautiful and important. And so to me, how I see ritual is a midwife through change. They help us move through things that are changing with grace, with ease, with beauty, and oftentimes with witness. We need witnesses for endings as much as we do for beginnings. When we're at the end of something, we need someone to look us in the eye, hold our hand, and say, "This is happening. I got you.
Right.
You're not alone." Right? Like to actually say, like, this is really happening. Because the thing about not ritualizing these moments is we often cross through a threshold, but we still think we're on the other side of it. We're on the side. For instance, here's a great example. When I wrote a chapter in the book on retirement.
Okay.
Right. I interviewed a woman in that chapter and she said she didn't do any ritual when she retired.
Okay.
But for a year after she retired, she kept on waking up at 5:30 in the morning.
Yes.
Panicked.
Yes.
Because her psyche thought she was still working.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So she was not fully on the other side. There was some part of her that was still very much planted in the other reality.
Yeah.
Ritual helps us acknowledge this is happening. This is changing. And the key word for ritual, especially in the book, is distinctions. Mm. They help us say, this was then, this is now.
I love that. And I think one of the things that I watch people, and I did it myself through my divorce many, many years ago. And I watch people make this mistake, similar to the 5 a.m. wake up, right? Is that we actually we divorce legally, we divorce financially, we divorce physically, but we forget to divorce emotionally.
Yes.
And so we're actually playing out the exact same relationship dynamics, sometimes decades after the divorce. And then like, what's the point?
Yeah. Oh, right? I mean, I have a story from like 2 weeks ago. My best friend, I facilitated their wedding 12 years ago. I was the officiant at their wedding. And 6 years after their wedding, I was the witness observing both of them getting divorced, essentially. Mm.
Mm-hmm.
And I went through that process of helping them fuse and helping them unfuse.
Unfuse, yes.
And 2 weeks ago, he said to me, he said, you know, I don't think that I'll ever fully untangle from her.
Yeah.
And I said, you know, that's problematic.
Mm.
You know, because there's some part of him who still wants to, emotionally, is still very intertwined with her. Years later, she's married and has a kid with someone else.
Oof.
You know, and the thing that he needs more of is ritual to help him really move through. I think he's moved through his grievances, but to move more into his grief.
Yes. Do they have kids together?
No.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
But he's holding on to, you know, years later, is still holding on pretty tight.
Wow. Yeah. And then like, how does he get into new relationship? Anything new is going to be infused with that. And there may not be toxicity in it, but there's sadness and there's grief, right? And all of that he brings without like cutting that cord.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Another way of referring to rituals, by the way, do you know what a Karen is?
C-A-I-R-N.
Okay.
Yes.
So imagine this. In life, we all are journeying. I mean, we're all just walking, and it's, you know, most of the time we have no idea where we're fucking going. Right.
Literally and, no
yeah.
fucking clue.
And then and then sometimes we make a choice, or a choice is made for us and we turn, you know, for 20 years, we're on the same path. And then suddenly we want a career change, or suddenly we're not in love with this person anymore. And so we're going to turn.
Yeah.
The point of a Karen is to mark the turn.
Yes.
Especially for people coming behind you, so that they know where to turn.
Yes.
And the same thing is true for all of our life transitions. We need to mark the places where we're turning. If we don't do that, we still think we're on the same path.
That's so great. So just for the audience who doesn't know what a Karen is, can you define it?
Yeah, a Karen is, I think it's an Irish term, and it's a pile of rocks. That's all it is. It's just like when you're out walking on a trail, if you see a pile of rocks, someone marked that place where it basically says, don't keep going ahead, turn here. It's a sign.
And they're often in those formations, right? They're actually the piles, right? They're actually the balancing piles. Mm-hmm. And I read something recently, and I'm sure that there's a metaphor that we can connect and create here together, Day. But I read recently, you know how people just build them everywhere, right? And there was sort of this admonition to people to stop building them in random places, because they're actually meant as these important guideposts for people. Yeah. And then when we just sort of willy-nilly build them because we think they're cool and we're trying to balance rocks.
They're confusing people.
They're confusing people and getting people lost, right? Yeah. I'm sure that we could dig into that as a metaphor for this.
But the real Karen metaphor is all about navigation.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's about how do you walk in a direction, even though you don't know where you're going, how do you navigate where you're going?
Yeah.
You know, so there's a real conversation about, you know, certainty versus uncertainty. And especially with life transitions, that's the big fear is I don't know. I don't know what's to come. I don't know who I'm going to be. I don't know what's going to happen to my kids. I don't know where I'm going to live, you know, I mean, my best friend's going through a divorce. Just as I told you, she just told her husband last week, you know, all of these uncertainties are up in her. I mean, thank God she's feeling resourced and actually she's feeling very empowered.
Yeah. Right now. Good.
But it is, but there's also an enormous amount of uncertainty as she approaches this threshold. Can I just read you something? It's like coming
to mind. Okay. Yes, I would love it. Is this from your book?
It is. Yeah.
Yay. Good. Yeah. I love it.
it's about this uncertainty. Mm-hmm. I wrote, endings are mysterious. They bring us humbly face to face with uncertainty. They remind us that was once so clearly in our grasp isn't anymore. And they ask of us whether or not we're ready to loosen our grip and let go, to trust that we can do that may be one of the most challenging aspects of divorce because we honestly don't know what lies ahead when we do let go. We don't know the relationships that will survive, the places we'll live, or the person we'll become. Instead, divorce simply asks us to cut the cord and trust that this leap of faith will have an outcome in service to a new, unknown, and necessary life.
Yes.
There's a lot of trust.
Yes, there is a lot of trust. And, you know, as we talked about with the Karens, right, there are people who have walked these paths before you. It's one of the reasons I call myself the divorce survival guide, right? Like I have been through this. I have walked this path, right? And I have set up all the Karens, right? And it's important. It's important to feel that sense of community and that you're not alone. Everyone thinks that, you know, that their story is different, that their story is unique, or that no one's ever done this before. And what I love is in my Facebook group, you've got 8,000 women telling stories to each other. And there are hundreds of people who get your story every single time. Mm-hmm. And that's, there's so much relief in that, I think, for women, anyone.
I used the word earlier, the word witness,
mm-hmm.
which is how I see you. You know, you're really providing a lot of witnessing. There's a great play on the word, though, like, because the question is, well, what is your role as a witness? Why, for instance, when we get married, we have a lot of witnesses.
Mm-hmm. But they sign papers, right? They're like,
papers. It depends on your religion. Some in my religion, we have like ceremonial witnesses. Mm-hmm. They do different things. There's a lot of witnessing in the beginning of that fusion.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, as one of my interviewees said, when I was talking about his divorce, he said, you know, when it came to the ending, it was me and my ex alone in a, you know, poorly lit office with a pen and this divorce papers. You know, he had no witnesses.
Yeah, right.
At the ending. And I think that's a especially with ritual, that is a crucial skill to have, is to be able to be witnessed in that ending.
Mm.
And for someone to, as I said before, to look you in the eyes and say, you're not alone. You know, like, this is happening. And I'm not turning away from this, even if it's painful with you. You know, I'm with you. And there's a great play on the word. An author, Bio Komolafe, who's an African author, he calls it withnessing.
I love that. Yes, because they are with you.
They're with you. And they're not turning away even when you're wrecked, even when your heart's exploding, even when you're terrified, you know, to have someone be with you, even in the pain. I think that's such an important part of ritual.
I love that. That's so beautiful.
You guys, warmer, sunnier days are calling, and you're going to want to fuel up for them with Factor's No Prep, No Mess meals. Factor's fresh, never frozen meals are dietitian approved and they're ready to eat in just 2 minutes. So no matter how busy you are, you're always going to have time to enjoy nutritious, great tasting meals. And I know that's really important to you guys right now. You're going through a hard time. You're in emotional upheaval, maybe some chaos. Really good, healthy, nutritious meals in 2 minutes. And I'm telling you, they're so good. You've got 35 different meals and more than 60 add-ons to choose from every week. And you'll always have new flavors to explore. Treat yourself to restaurant quality meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, blackened salmon. Ugh, so good, you guys. So head to factormeals.com/DSG50 and use code DSG50 to get 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next month. So the code is DSG50 at factormeals.com/DSG50 to get 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next month while your subscription is active. We all know that feeling. You open your closet. It's full, but you have literally nothing to wear. Story of my life, you guys. Enter Armoire. Armoire allows you to rent high-quality designer clothing for every occasion, whether you're planning your outfit for a date or packing for a conference for work, or you need a gown for a black tie event, you will always be the best dressed person in the room without ever having to brave a fitting room with fluorescent lights. Armoire makes getting dressed easy. With a clothing rental membership from Armoire, build the perfect wardrobe with brands that are high quality, unique, and recommended just for you. All you have to do is take a 5-minute style quiz and select items from your dynamic personalized closet, and then the styles show up at your door in as little as 2 days. And then when you're ready for new clothes, you just swap them out for more new-to-you styles. But here's the deal. Armoire is also women-founded and women-led. They even spotlight women-owned designers on their website. So I know that I'm wearing brands that are aligned with my values. And if you're listening to my podcast, probably yours. I love that I can support a business that's built by women like me. And if you're ready to have your dream closet delivered to your door, you've got to try Armoire. I promise you will never be without the perfect outfit for any occasion ever again. How about that? So right now, my listeners can give Armoire a try and get up to 50% off their first month. That's up to $125 off. Just visit armoire.style/DSG. So that's Armoire, A-R-M-O-I-R-E, .style/DSG to get up to 50% off your first month and never worry about what to wear again. Try Armoire today.
I'm curious, you do what you call morning altars. This is what you're widely known for.
That's what I'm known for. Yeah.
This is what you're known for, the morning altar guy. And I got to say, at first I was like, what? And then I went and I looked on your website and I was looking at this stuff and it's
like,
just,
I'm enchanted.
I'm like, I want to do that in the middle of LA? Yes, totally enchanted. And so can you talk about that so that maybe it's a segue into sort of creating this
I mean, I'll tell you this. So let's just set it up for your listeners. Mm-hmm. I basically create impermanent art out of nature. Cool. It's not just art, though. Mm-hmm. They're devotional pieces. They're dedicated to something important. This practice came about 10 years ago when I was going, and this is so appropriate for this podcast.
Great. Awesome.
When I in 1 year, my dad died. Mm. And I went through a divorce and I was wrecked, mm-hmm. totally wrecked.
Yeah.
It wasn't a marriage. It was like we were domestic partners and divorced, uh-huh. but it was a divorce. And I was I was completely just out of my mind, soaked in grief. You know, sure. It was a lot of loss in 1 year. Mm-hmm. And the only thing that was getting me out of my house at the time was my dog, mm-hmm. which was my dad's dog. I adopted her. Mm-hmm. And we'd go on these walks. And along the way, I'd find beautiful things just on the ground, you know, just some flowers or a feather or, you know, just leaves, beautiful leaves. And one morning we went to the top of this hill in the park. And I found these beautiful mushrooms growing under this tree. And I don't know what compelled me to do this at the time, but I sat down under that tree and I just started to rearrange the mushrooms. And I mm-hmm. put in some leaves and some berries, and an hour went by like it was a minute. Something in front of me was beautiful and ordered. It was symmetrical. Yeah. And I realized in retrospect, what was happening was, because with grief, your whole entire mind and world is totally in disarray.
Yeah. It's chaos. Yeah.
Uh-huh. So just spending an hour and literally ordering berries and leaves, just like the stakes are really low, right? Leaves and berries. It's not a big deal.
Right.
But I ordered them into something symmetrical and beautiful. I made little mm-hmm. patterns out of it. Mm-hmm. And I felt lighter.
Yeah.
My grief wasn't completely weighing on me. And so I challenged myself, could I come back to that same spot for 30 days and do something similar, not, you know, make different patterns. And, you know, 30 days came and went and I didn't stop. And I started to share them with friends and I started to share them on social media. And then the whole thing just exploded. And what's happened now is, you know, there are tens of thousands of people all over the world for reasons beyond my understanding, for, you know, the death of their grandparent or the birth of a child or, you know, their birthday or whatnot. People are making these pieces. They're going out to their parks or their backyards. They're making them for their reasons. And then they send them to me as like, you know, this point of inspiration and
being a witness.
And being a witness and being
being the witness. Absolutely.
And also they're impermanent, which really is a huge teaching of this ritual practice, which is that they're not meant to last. And so it really teaches people unattachment and how to just be in the moment by creating something and also how to let go, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. So anyway, this is, so I've been devoted my life to this for 7+ years. I'm doing 100-person teacher training right now, teaching people to bring this to prisons and to high schools and to memory care facilities.
Yes. And,
you know, beautiful. Morning altars is a ritual. And so this book really is standing on the shoulders of that. Mm-hmm. But it's not just about making, you know, anything with nature. This book is, I'd say 90% of it you could do inside your home. But it's really standing on the shoulders of, we need more ritual in the world. We need more ways to make meaning, because things are so insane right now. Mm-hmm. And ritual is a sane making endeavor.
I love that, because there's so much chaos in the world right now. I mean, so much chaos. We've got political chaos. We've got, you know, COVID chaos. We've got, you know, I'm sitting here right now with my teenager walking back and forth in the house because he didn't feel safe going to school today. And I had to let him honor himself, because that's what I do, right? That's what I want. And I, you know, we teach our kids to advocate for themselves and be in touch with themselves. And then, you know, when they express it, right? Like, we got to listen to it, right? And, but there is so much chaos.
Yeah.
And this making order out of that chaos feels, maybe that's why when I was looking at your website and your Instagram earlier, I was so deeply soothed.
Yeah, because we need more opportunities to make order, mm-hmm. to do something that has a beginning, middle, and end. Mm. I mean, that's the thing about ritual. They always have a beginning, a middle, and then they end. Mm-hmm. They're contained, mm-hmm. you know, and they essentially are little islands in time. They're like these little places where we can go and really look at the parts of our lives that we can't look at in our day-to-day lives. What we can when we're doing ritual, because they're spaces that allow for things like grief and vision and uncertainty and emotion. And, you know, they make space for it all. Essentially, it's, you know, the real word is whole. There are places that encourage wholeness.
Yeah.
Which allows it all, you know, even the broken parts of ourselves.
Right. And when we're in the middle of a divorce or we're crossing over that threshold, as you say, we do feel so broken and so fractured, right? And I can imagine this from feeling so fractured to be putting these things in order as you're going through it to be very healing.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the two rituals in Hello Goodbye are, one of them is inspired by, do you know what hand fasting is?
No.
Hand fasting is a tradition of essentially when you get married to hold your wrists and hands together and to literally bind them.
That's right. Yes. Okay.
And to have purpose and intention in binding that. Mm-hmm. And one of the rituals is, you know, you can have one witness or, you know, 10 witnesses, but then of course, this is for the couples that can do this. Many can't, most can't, but some can. Mm-hmm. And so one of the rituals is the unbinding and to be witnessed in unbinding. And every time there's an unbinding, there's a question in the book that is very relevant for each other to hear each other. Would you like to hear one of the questions?
I would love to, if you would share that. I would love it.
I'm happy to. So this is in the chapter on divorce, and this ritual is called the unbinding ritual. Uh-huh. Because I wrote it like a recipe, there's a whole, you know, preparation, intentions.
Yes.
How to write an invitation to this kind of ritual.
Oh, cool.
Because that's needed, right? I mean, these things, they're not mainstream to do this. What's mainstream is to just have lawyers and be done with it.
That's right. That's right.
So here are the questions. There's seven rounds. So essentially, it's seven binding a couple seven times. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And the first round is to begin essentially with courtesy. So the first question is, what can you praise about the person before you?
It's great. I love that.
What can you praise about them, you know? Mm-hmm. And then there's an untying. So there's only six more left. Mm-hmm. The second one is a reflection on the relationship. Mm. How did you grow as a person? And what did you learn about yourself while together? Mm. And then there's another one, and I'll just read you one more.
No, that's okay. Read them. I mean, it's up to you. Yes, I love it. I love it.
So the third round is to take a hard look and claim your side of things. And the question is, what is mine in this dynamic? Mm-hmm. And what can I take responsibility for here? Mm-hmm. That's the third round. The fourth one is there anything you wish to hear from me? Oh, wow. Letting the other person, you know, respond.
Oh, beautiful.
The fifth round is basically to harvest the learnings of your time together. So the question is, what qualities am I bringing forward from this relationship into new relationships?
Ugh, I love it. I love it, right? Because we're not the same person. They have fused, like we've bound with them. We have changed through and with them in our lives.
And there are some, you know, qualities that there's big learning that happens in any relationship, and especially the end of a relationship, there's big learnings. We can take those learnings into new relationships.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Beautiful. Yeah. I love that.
And so the last two are round six is letting the witnesses talk. So what are you seeing here? That's the sixth round, because sometimes it's too big for us to see on our own. We need a third person. Mm-hmm. And the seventh round is, what's a blessing you can offer the other person for their journey ahead? And just letting it end sweetly and, you know, basically wishing that person well. And, you know, to me, this is then you must burn the cord.
Oh, you burn the bindings.
The bindings. Yeah. Uh-huh. The thing that bound you together, it ends with the burning of that. And then, you know, I always really encourage every ritual in this book to end sweetly. So there's, you know, an encouragement for chocolate and you know, just it's sometimes these break our hearts open, and we need a balm at the end.
Yes, we do. I love it. I love that so much. I wish I had that. I mean, honestly, you know, I got divorced 13 years ago, so it's been, you know, we were not talking as openly, certainly, about any of this stuff, but I just, it's so beautiful. So what do you do? So what kind of rituals can you do? I mean, that's obviously a sort of a public, a togetherness, right? What about for people who, for whom this is a solitary experience? Yeah. I mean, maybe they have a friend or a witness, but they're not doing this with their ex.
I want to say one thing before because I have a ritual called the surrendering ritual. It's for individuals. It's not for people. Yeah. But I want to say something. I put it in a variety of times in this chapter. And I think I also had some friends who have been divorced who were like, you better put what I'm about to say in this chapter.
Interesting.
I said, okay. And they said, make sure your readers know that there is a right and a wrong time to do ritual.
Such a great point.
Yeah.
So
and
what do you
have to ask yourself, is this the right time for this? Because sometimes if there's so much rage or there's upset or there's, you know, it's like, if you're in the heat of it, it's not the right time.
That's right. That's right. I think that's a really good point. I mean, I was gonna say, I don't really allow, but I mean, I don't have control over it. But when I work with my clients, one of my biggest things is you don't want to do anything exactly. about your divorce while you're in the heat of it.
Exactly.
You make this decision, you communicate your decision, and then you let the dust settle because
exactly.
Besides the fact that, you know, but you're making the biggest legal and financial decisions of your life in the middle of all of this emotional upheaval, that's terrible. But also it's, you're not in your right mind.
No.
They don't let you write wills when you're not in your right mind. They don't let you sign prenups 2 weeks before, you know, or like the day before your wedding because you're not in a, you know, in a calm, neutral state.
Yeah.
And so I was thinking about as you were reading the questions for the unbinding, I was thinking about that if there's any heat left,
exactly,
this could go very sideways.
Yeah, right? And that's why it's a very important question to consistently ask yourself, is this the right time?
Yeah.
You know, and very often if people ask me, you know, is this the right, you know, where there's still some heat between me and my ex, is this the right time? And I'd say, skip to the individual ritual. If you're questioning it, it's not.
Mm-hmm.
Skip to the individual ritual. It's important to do ritual, but maybe it's not the right time to do it with your ex. Even if you think you're capable of it, you know, if you're questioning it, maybe it's not the right time.
Yeah, because I can imagine that if you thought of it or you heard of it and you were like, oh my God, this would be so great for us to do, that's probably a great time. But if you're like, oh, I don't know. Then maybe not.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Yep.
So in that individual ritual, you know, it's called the surrendering ritual. And, you know, the thing about rituals that they need to be done.
Hmm.
All rituals can't be thought. They need to be done.
So it's a physical act. It has to. Yes. Okay. Uh-huh.
And it's in the book, I call it symbolic action.
Okay.
So you're burning, or submerging, or burying, or breaking, or tying, or untying their actions that are symbolic. Mm-hmm. They represent, like, for instance, that unbinding that I spoke about.
Yeah.
That's an action. You're physically doing it, but it carries deep symbolism, deep symbolism. So in this individual ritual, it's helping people move through grievances into grief and forgiveness. That's the point of the ritual. And so it employs different elements to do that. So it starts off with fire, and then it goes into earth, and then it ends with water.
Okay.
And it's basically taking some of the meaningful elements from your relationship. The love letters or the ring or, you know, a photograph or whatnot. Mm-hmm. And it's, some things are to be burned. Some things are to be buried.
Mm.
Some things are to be essentially released in water.
Mm.
And those in the ritual, they all three have a different purpose. The fire, of course, is to deal with grievance and anger and upset, you know, to really acknowledge that's meaningful. Your upset and your anger has served you,
mm-hmm.
Right?
Right. Yeah.
It's to acknowledge that, you know, to acknowledge your grievance, your
anger. No one told us the truth about parenthood. Why? This is the podcast everyone needed before they had kids, because now that those little ones are here, whew, there is a lot to unpack. I'm Rachel Shepardota, and I am your host for the podcast No One Told Us, where we tell the truth about parenting and let you in on all the stuff you really should have known about before having kids. I am the founder of Hey Sleepy Baby, but this podcast is so much more than sleep. We'll be diving into all the topics that you really care about and need to know while you do your best job raising those adorable, tiny humans. Our goal is to just make you feel less alone and less overwhelmed. There are so many things that no one tells us before becoming a parent, and I think that we should really pull back the curtain on becoming a first-time or second-time mom or dad to share the good, the bad, and the ugly. We'll have a little education, a little fun, and a whole lot of heart that goes into each and every episode. So join me and our amazing guests each week to hear us talk about what no one told us.
Feel like you're the martyr in your family? You're not alone. Hey, this is Joanne.
And Bree.
And we're from the No Guilt Mom podcast. Bree, we talk to a lot of moms.
Yeah, we sure do.
And if you're a mom who has a to-do list that is so massive that you get overwhelmed and you shut down,
or if you fall into the habit of doing everything for everyone and don't know how to change it, we can help you become a no-guilt mom.
We're going to take you from family martyr to family model. That's role model, so that you role model the behavior that you want to see out of your kids.
You're going to go from being tired and overwhelmed to energized and guilt-free.
Every week, you'll get actionable strategies that you can implement right away from the experts that we interview and from us.
We also have a whole lot of fun, so check out the No Guilt Mom podcast everywhere you listen to your favorite shows.
Or your rage, or you're wrong. You're wrong in the, you know, feeling of being wronged.
Uh-huh.
You know, and giving voice to those feelings and letting them move through you.
Mm-hmm.
So by the end of this ritual, it's really about releasing, you know, like physical objects, releasing physical objects so you can see in front of you manifest the thing you've been going through emotionally.
Mm.
And see the ending in front of you physically.
Mm-hmm.
Our psyches need that. We need physical, tangible reminders that this is buried, or this is burned up, or this is submerged. We need to see it in order for our psyches to really grok what's happening.
Hmm. You've talked a lot about moving from grievances into grief. And I'm wondering if you can speak to that just a little bit more about what you mean by that and how that works and manifests in the self.
You mind if I do a little reading?
I would love to do a little reading.
I spoke about it, so why
You're
not?
Like, I wrote a chapter on this, so.
Yeah. Okay. Too often cords remain unsevered. I'm starting in the middle. So like there's paragraphs before. Okay. Too often, cords remain unsevered, and they sound a lot like grievances. I don't deserve this. This is unfair. Or I've been wronged are common outrages that refuse to end. These remain after the heat of a divorce because our modern culture barely provides any resources or skills to express and transform our grievances, aside from through lawyers. Mm-hmm. Without doing anything to our grievances, they remain stuck. And we stay justified in the story of how we've been wronged. Sadly, our grievances become the relationship's bitter lifeline, the cords we're left holding long after the relationship's over. And maintaining them is what prevents us from fully putting the relationship down. Where grievances are the festering wounds of affliction, grief is a skill that asks you to get good at loving what you are losing. Mm. Despite all of your best attempts, despite how you want things to be, it is enormously challenging to practice grief in a grief-phobic culture that translates divorce as, you failed me.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of grief, we masquerade in anger, blame, judgment, and victimization. Some go kicking and screaming through a divorce, being forced into it rather than choosing and understanding it as a part of the way things are. The belief of a grief illiterate culture such as ours is that endings are not supposed to happen.
Mm-hmm.
They are wrong. And therefore, when we're in an ending such as a divorce, it can easily become, I am wrong. Mm-hmm. Yet endings are not wrong. They are as much a part of life as our beginnings. My teacher, Stephen Jenkinson, so beautifully and profoundly speaks of grieving endings as a love affair in reverse, understanding that loss and love are two wings of the same bird.
Oh, so gorgeous.
It is. It's gorgeous and heartbreaking and very human.
Yeah. And it is so heartbreaking that we do live in this, as you said, I love it, grief illiterate culture, right? That makes these endings, they're wrong, but they're also, or we just ignore them, right? They didn't really happen. So like whistle past the graveyard, just keep going. Don't talk about it. Don't take this time and space to ritualize it and be in it, you know, because we always talk about like the only way through is through, right? Exactly. Well, let's be present. Let's not like, you know, run through the threshold, through the doorway with our hands over our ears and like pretending it's not happening. Like, let's be present to this.
Because endings are valuable.
Mm-hmm.
That's why.
Yeah.
It's like the better you can end something, the better you can begin it.
That's right. That's right.
They're connected.
Well, and also it doesn't end. If you're rushing through.
Right.
And you're not.
Exactly.
You're not ending anything.
That's what I was saying about grievances in the writing. You know, we don't tend to our grievances and transform them into grief, then we're still holding on. The anger is the relationship's still alive. It's just in the form of anger. You know, it's the grief that lets us finally put it down. And, you know, and I'm not saying, you know, like I have friends who have gotten divorced where it's also celebratory.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just grief. It's also, there's a lot of joy in that too, but all change is bitter sweet.
Yeah.
You know, it has both capacities change. Mm-hmm. And there's parts that are really hard and there are parts that are really amazing and enjoyable and, you know, giving, that's why I said the word whole before, you know, providing a space that can allow all of that, the blessings and the pain, the beauty and the grief, you know, all the whole thing.
I love it. So what's your hope sort of, you know, when this book comes out into the world, January 25th, right? And everyone's going to buy it. Who's listening to this right now?
That's my hope.
Promise. Right? Yeah, that's my hope. That's my hope. Everyone buys this fucking book. You know, now that, you know, if everyone buys it and they consume it, and I love the idea of having this on your shelf as a recipe book, like that's just so genius. What's your hope for the impact that that will have on us?
The hope is that we can, in some ways, remember our humanity. That's the hope. I mean, I really feel like we're losing our humanity these days. We're more isolated, we're more distracted, we're more angry, we're more polarized, you know? And I mean, even sitting on a plane recently, it was like the tension was so intense and people were unwilling to talk to each other or be kind to each other, you know? And to me, ritual is, and unfortunately it's been co-opted by religion, but ritual predates religion.
Oh, speak to that a little bit. Speak to that. Because I know we have some, a lot of listeners who are either religious or sort of struggling in a religious context and may have their hackles up a little bit about like sort of contraction between those two.
So the reason I use the word recipe, the best metaphor I could find for ritual is food, is cooking or baking.
Yeah.
And food, any recipe that you have comes from somewhere. Right. I mean, for instance, in the book, I wrote about my mom's mandel bread recipe. Mm. You know, her mother passed it on to her. Her mother got it from her mother. It came all the way from Europe. Who knows before then? It could have come all the way from, I don't know, like maybe hundreds of years through our family line. So there's a traditional quality to that recipe. However, you know, when I make it, I'm updating it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm being creative with it. It's me. That's who I am. I'm very creative. So I see ritual having the same capacity, which is that they come from someplace or they can be passed on or passed along. And also they can be reinvented and created and our imaginations can make them up. You know, it's really like the difference between something being sacred and something being mundane is our capacity to make it sacred. That's it. We can, you know, I could take a glass and break it and that can mean nothing or that can mean everything.
Mm-hmm.
It's just about what we determine it to be. And that's, I think, the power of ritual is that, you know, like you can, you know, take a rope, cut it into many pieces. And that can mean nothing. Or it could symbolize the pain that you're in your relationship. And, you know, tying it back together can symbolize the ways that you're coming back together.
And that's really about intention, right? Really setting the intention for such a thing to exist in the embodiment of that.
Exactly. It's mm-hmm. intention. I think it's intention mixed with quite a bit of creativity. There's a quote I'm thinking of from this ethnographer. He wrote a lot about ritual named Arnold van Gennep. And he has an expression called to pivot towards the sacred. To pivot, right? To turn our bodies towards what we think is sacred or meaningful or holy or whatever word works for you, but to actually turn towards the things that mean something to us.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in today's day and age, we have a meaning-making crisis. You know, too little things mean too, we have such little meaning, we're grasping. So I'm on a mission to help people make more meaning, especially with these moments like divorce.
Mm-hmm.
That is a meaningful, meaningful, life-changing threshold. It can mean a lot. You can change from it.
Yeah.
You must change from it, actually.
You must change from it and heal through it.
And you don't have to do it alone.
Mm-hmm. That's
and
right.
You don't have to be unresourced in it. Mm-hmm. You can find resources. You can find ways to do it that let you feel anchored, that let you feel accepted, that allow you to feel tethered and connected and reflective. You know, there's ways to do this. And anyway, that's what my greatest wish is, to circle back to your question.
I love it. I love it. Amen. I mean, I think it's beautiful. I think it's incredible. Your work is beautiful. So where can everybody find you? Where can everyone buy the book?
Yeah, you can find me either at dayshulkret.com, which is, if you can spell it, go there. And my other website is Morning Altars, and that's altars with an A.com.
Mm-hmm.
Also, if you love beauty and you like meaning, I have I have an Instagram thread that I'm very proud of. I put a lot of energy and a lot of time into that.
It's gorgeous.
It's gorgeous,
you guys. It's not just gorgeous. It is mesmerizing. It's like, yeah, it's beautiful.
And it's really hard these days to put something in the world with your whole heart. It really is. I think we're just all swimming in so much content and such, you know, shallowness. And I'm just giving my heart to this whole thing. And so anyway, that's my Instagram and websites. And then this book, you can get it if you're an Amazon person or Barnes and Noble people or your local bookstore, or on my website, I'm selling the book too. But this has been a 3-year journey. I've gone through hell and back while writing this book because I wrote it during a pandemic.
Mm.
And, you know, I've had enormous loss during writing this book. And the fact that this book is still being born to me means something, that even in the midst of a lot of change in my own personal life, the health of my mother, the health of my grandmother, the health of my relationships, you know, all of that, this book is coming through. And my greatest wish is that it's a resource for people right now who feel like they need it.
I love it. And all of the links will be in the show notes. Highly recommend. I know I'm going to be getting myself a copy for sure. Day, thank you so much for coming on and for sharing this. I think it's really going to be transformational for people.
Thank you so much. I'm grateful to be here.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Divorce Survival Guide podcast. If you like what you hear, head on over to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen in and leave me a review. And don't forget to follow me on Instagram at The Divorce Survival Guide. I'll see you next time. And until then, remember, you my love, deserve to be happy.
Hey there, I'm Debbie Reber, the founder of Tilt Parenting and the author of the book Differently Wired. The mission of Tilt is to change the way neurodivergence, whether that's having a learning disability, having ADHD, being gifted, autistic, or some combination of all of the above, is perceived and experienced so differently wired kids and the parents like us raising them can truly thrive. On the Tilt Parenting podcast, I get to talk with authors, therapists, educators, and parenting experts who are committed to this mission. I ask the questions my listeners are most curious about when it comes to supporting our kids. And in turn, my guests share strategies for challenges, out-of-the-box ideas for navigating school, best practices for therapies, tips for advocating, and so many thoughtful insights on what it really takes to help our kids grow up feeling seen and respected so they can create awesome lives for themselves. I know that raising a differently wired kid can feel overwhelming and isolating, but I promise you, you are not alone, and it can feel so much better. If you're on this parenting journey, come listen to Tilt Parenting. Together, we can shift this paradigm and show up for our exceptional kids with hope, possibility, and joy.